Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast where we discuss tips, tricks, and current topics related to all things in the blind and partially sighted community. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce the founder of Blind Beginnings and your host, Sean Marcellet, and whatever co-host is on this week. Now, here's your host, Sean.
Welcome back to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet, and I have many co-hosts with me today. We have Clement and John, Randy, Nika, and Colby. Welcome, guys.
Welcome.
Hello.
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 Hi.
Today's episode is kind of exciting. We are launching something we're calling Ask Abby, and Abby is a Blind Beginnings youth. Although sometimes I might be one of those youth, depending on the question. And what this is our listeners can send in questions that they would like answered by one of us. So if there's a question about blindness or visual impairment that you would like answered, you can send an email to limitless@blindbeginnings.ca. And if you want your question to be anonymous, it can be, just let us know that. And we will answer your question on the podcast. So for tonight's episode, I've got a bunch of questions that were sent to me by sighted people that I know, just to get us started. And these guys are all with me today to help answer the questions. So are you guys ready?
Yep.
So the first question is, goes out to those with probably with no vision, because the question is, when sighted people close their eyes, they see black. What do blind people see when they close their eyes? Clement, can you answer that?
Yes. So that's of course, like Sean just said, one of the most common questions we all get. And it's really hard to explain because it's as someone with no vision, I would have to say I see nothing, except the problem is, what does nothing look like? And when you get into people who have different levels of visual impairment all up and down the spectrum, you'll also get different answers. So as a person who can't see anything, I would say I see nothing, which the closest explanation would probably be if you were to stare into outer space without all the stars and planets and other bodies.
So when you close your eyes, it looks exactly the same as when you open your eyes.
Basically, yeah.
Right. What about you, Colby?
So for me, when I close my eyes, I don't really see anything. Although when I am awake, I can see light. So that's different than what Clement sees. But when I close my eyes, I definitely don't see anything.
Do you see black?
No, I don't.
Okay.
It's dark, but not all the time.
It's an interesting, beyond the closing the eyes, just whether blind people see black, I think is one of those misconceptions, right? I know for me, and it's really hard if you're born blind, how do you even know what black is to be able to say whether you see black or not, or whether you're in the dark or not, because dark and black are visual. So for myself, the spots of vision where I don't have vision are more like trying to see through wax paper or like a really dense fog. So it's not black at all. It's just nothing.
But it's different from each person though, right?
Yeah.
It could. And if you go with the definition of dark as, you know, just no light, then I guess that would be accurate. But it's, you know, for a lot of people, that's not quite the case. There is either light or, you know, like Sean said, that idea of seeing, trying to look through something, but not being able to.
Mm-hmm. When I close my eyes, though, it is dark. It's like, it cuts off the light perception that I have. So
also, people don't realize when you close your eyes, it's not just black. You're looking at the back of your eyelids.
You are, but you've cut out all the light, I guess, which makes it dark.
But sometimes, because I have good amount of vision, but when I close my eyes, it's not always black.
Yeah, I see orange, like, I see like yellow and stuff when I close my eyes.
Yeah, there's, like, the kind of lights, in, like, you get those lights in your eyes, like, people say when you get, like, bonked in the head with a ball, you see, like, lights. So, it's like, if I close my eyes, sometimes, if my eyes are tired or if I've done something, like, you see, like, other colors or something else that's not just straight up black.
Yeah. Well, if there's, like, the lights on in the room, or if you're on the beach or something and it's sunny, it's not black when you close your eyes either.
But do you notice, Clement, do you notice when the sun's, like, when your eyes are closed, do you notice, does it seem brighter or does it seem the same?
Well, I have no light perception, so I have no light perception, so I don't.
The next one is equally interesting. What do you see in your dreams? And I think people are super curious. So for me, if I know what it looks like, so I have a degenerative eye condition, so I could see more when I was younger, but never perfectly. So for example, if it's something that I saw when I could see better, then I might be able to see that in my dream. But like a person who I never saw before I was as blind as I am now is faceless in the dream. So I just know who it is, but it's like a shape. It's just like, I just know who everyone is and what everyone is, but it's not because I'm seeing it. I'm still visually impaired, I guess, except I'm not, you know what I mean? Like I could be a superhero in my dream and be able to see perfectly, but what I'm looking at is still the way I see it in life. But what about you guys?
So for me, it's weird. I actually, in my dreams, I think I have 20/20 vision just because regularly in my life, when I walk by trees, I can't see individual leaves, or when I see a person, I can't see their eye color or specific facial details. But in my dreams, I can always pinpoint exactly every single detail of every single person or every single leaf on every single plant.
Interesting.
I noticed when I'm dreaming, because I used to be able to see quite a bit more, I would say I see most things in my dreams, and I would say they appear to be in 20/20 vision, I think, because they're not a blob. They're definitely what I remember them looking like. But the one thing, the people that I know in my dreams, they've never like aged.
Yeah.
So when I see them, they're like what I last saw them as. For the most part, I know who everyone is in my dreams as well.
What about you, Clement?
Well, my dreams are pretty much like waking experiences. It's really weird because I was born blind, I don't have a visual cortex stimulus when I dream. So when I have dreams, sometimes they're basically like when I'm awake. So it's really weird because sometimes I'll have a dream and then I'll wake up and I'll go, did I actually dream that or did it actually happen? And the only times I can know for sure that it's a dream is, you know, when weird things do happen and I'm going to be like, okay, there's no way that could have happened in a regular day, which means I probably did dream it. So for me, there's no visual change at all, I would say.
Okay, another one that's kind of very visual related, ironically. Do you care about color if you've never seen color? And if you do care, how has it been described to you in a way that you understood? Or how have you learned about color if it's something you can't see?
I care.
Yeah.
I care. So when I could see more, I was never actually able to pick out individual colors and say, like, this is green or that is yellow. I could only ever see color in shades. So for me, color matters to me still. And I will ask people, like, with my niece, I'll say, what is she wearing today? And then somebody will describe it to me because I like to know what people are wearing, if it's something different, something that's in fashion or in style. But for me, like, I was never actually able to, like, specifically pick out a color. And be able to say, this is red and this is yellow, or like, this is red and that's pink. Those don't go together. Mm-hmm. Something like that. It's kind of interesting because I have seen color, but I've not seen it in the same way.
Yeah, I'm similar. I used to read my pencil crayons as a kid because I couldn't tell the difference between like blue and green or purple and brown. And I didn't want to draw a purple tree. And, you know, like I didn't want to break the social rules of color.
That reminds me, in high school, we were doing this art project and I didn't even realize at the time that I was using colors that possibly didn't go or didn't really look good together. But to me, they were colors that had good enough contrast for me to be able to see them. That was one thing I had to talk to a teacher about, because obviously like I can't put proper colors together necessarily in order to see them well enough. So. Right.
Yeah.
I would use whatever worked for me.
What about you, Nika? Can you see color?
Yeah, so I'm not sure if I would be a good person to answer this just because I can differentiate between color. But when I was little, my mom would teach me them. And kind of from that moment on, it was really important, just like Colby said, when it comes to fashion. And I was really, really specific with colors. I thought it was really fun to learn the color wheel and to learn the different names of the colors. And I would be that person who, when I would go to a doctor's appointment and they would show me different colored objects, I would be like, that's aquamarine, that's chartreuse, instead of saying like regular, you know, blue or green or yellow. Just find it really fascinating.
What the heck color is chartreuse?
Chartreuse is neon yellow.
Okay.
Only I do get confused between colors that kind of overlap. So the whole black versus navy debate, or is turquoise considered a blue or a green?
Right. Yes. I have heard from people who are born blind that books, like descriptions in books, has helped them sort of understand color, like yellow being described as warm and sunny, or blue being described as cold. I don't know. Clement, has anyone ever
I can speak to that. I think descriptions were definitely what did it for me. So I would consider myself somewhere in the middle. I don't base a lot of my decisions on the color of things, but I wouldn't say I don't care about them either. They definitely do interest me. They fascinate me. Descriptions from books I got a lot. The other thing that also helped me all the time was associating them with different objects, or of course, commonly for kids, it's usually fruit. That kind of always helped as well. And also cultural influences as well, because like in Chinese culture, red is a very bold color. It's kind of representative of being strong and brave and all that, and you know, being prosperous or, you know, good luck and stuff like that. So there's also all kinds of like cultural connotations as well, you know, and you know, things like green being the color of life or the healing colors, you know, that kind of stuff is, you know, of course that's not just limited to one culture. But now as an adult, with that understanding, I definitely do associate color with things more. So like the most common example would be when I'm shopping for a guitar, if a guitar says something like, you know, trans blue, which is like a translucent kind of blue color, like an ocean blue, I will usually go for that because I do like the color blue in the sense that it's, to me, it's calming and I love the idea of the ocean. So blue is something really important to me. Or simple colors, I would say, are more of the things that I can distinguish. Whereas if you start giving me color combinations, then I'll kind of go, okay, I don't really care so much about that anymore. Or I'll pick a particular color combination because I like the way it sounds. You know, like if someone says black and gold, my brain kind of goes, ooh. You know, like I like that idea.
Yeah. So this question, visual first impressions are pretty important to sighted people. Do you think that blind people are less judgmental because they're not making those impressions visually? the reality is, if you can't see somebody and what they look like and what they're wearing and all of those things, then you're always going to have a first impression. But maybe you would be distracted if you could see and make certain impressions you wouldn't make if you couldn't see. But I think we have other ways of being judgmental.
To add on to that, and yes, in the sense that we're less judgmental because we don't have a visual, we will never have a first impression until we talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you can see, if you look at them from 10 feet away or 6 feet away, as the case may be right now, some people may go, well, I don't know if I want to talk to that person or not, where we don't have that choice. So that's the yes sense. But the no sense is that some blind people, and I have a bad habit of doing this as well, especially when I was younger, not so much anymore, but you know, the first thing somebody said to me, the word they used, the way their voice sounded, their accent, all of those things would have factored into a first impression, which may or may not have been kind of a similar effect on me in the sense that, oh, okay, I don't know if I want to keep this conversation going. So I definitely agree with you, Sean, that there are definitely still ways for us to be judgmental, you know, visual first impressions aside. What I do think, though, is that not having that visual first impression and knowing how big of an idea that is usually makes us think twice before we judge other people.
Interesting.
In the sense that we know that, and also because of our own experiences as disabled people, because we're judged by our visual appearances so much, when you think about that, it makes you hesitate before judging somebody else just based on the fact that they say something with an accent, or maybe their voice is a little more timid, or they have an interesting way of speech, or what have you.
This is where I'm going to make myself look really, really bad. I don't judge people in the sense that I don't treat them differently. Like, I don't not approach someone just because I don't, you know, like what they do or what they wear. But for me, I am able to tell what clothes someone wears. And, you know, when I talk to them, I just automatically, naturally just, like, I try to look at their face, but I also see, like, their outfit, and I can kind of tell, generally, you know, are they dressing properly for the occasion, or does it look flattering on them, stuff like that. And I definitely think, you know, fashion is, like, what you like, and it doesn't really matter what anyone else thinks. And it is something that I'm trying to do, like, my own self-improvement on, which is not to really be judgmental about other people's clothes, just because it's not really my place, but it's just something that automatically I do think about. Like, when I see someone, I think, oh, okay, what's the logo? What's the brand? Like, what is it?
I think everybody does that. I wouldn't say that's just you. I think that's just the natural reflex of being a member of society and having a knowledge of fashion. I think people tend to do that. It's like cars. Like, if you know your cars, when you see someone driving down the street, you're going to see that car and you're going to go, oh man, that person must be rich. They might not be. You never know, right? But I think that kind of first, like the kind of jumping to an immediate conclusion is something that everybody does just based on different things.
Yeah. And I think the key is to be like self-aware, like just because you're self-aware doesn't make it right to do that. But the key is be self-aware and try to work on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do think that I give people more of a chance than maybe I would if I could see. I have no idea how I would be if I could see, but I think not knowing what people look like, not knowing what they're wearing, like it's not really even something that I might be curious, and I might even have an image in my mind of what I think they look like just based on how they carry themselves, how they talk. But I think I have maybe relationships, like deeper relationships with people that I wouldn't have if I could see. Like, I think that's actually one of the strengths of being blind, is not really focusing on what somebody looks like. But that's just my opinion.
I think that'd be a curious question that some sighted people might not even think about, Sean, is like, as a blind person who doesn't see at all, you might not judge what a person by what they're wearing, but then you might like judge of what you think they look like just by the way someone acts.
Mm-hmm. It's always a fun party game to have my friends, you know, ask me, so what do you think I look like? Or or even just people on TV, like people on TV.
I know, because we didn't understand, you said the same game with me. So it's like, oh, you're not going to look like that right now? Like, nope.
Exactly. Yeah. Just today, Emily, our program coordinator, described herself when she was introducing herself for one of the workshops. And she said she had glasses and curly hair. And I was like, oh, I didn't picture you with glasses. I've known her for a month, right? So yeah, it's kind of fun. Okay.
I want to thought that she has curly hair.
There you go, right? So we all have like a picture in our mind when we hear somebody's voice. And it's interesting. It would be interesting to compare one day if your picture looks like my picture, right? If we pictured her the same way. Now we're biased because we know.
We can play a game later.
So this is sort of related, I guess. How do you know if clothes look good on you? How do you organize your closets? And how do you know your outfits match?
How does anyone know if clothes really look good on them?
Yeah, this is something that sighted people struggle with too, like kind of finding styles that, you know, look good on people. And everyone has different opinions, right? Some people might say a tight fit is inappropriate, or some people might say loose fit is kind of too flabby and you shouldn't wear it in public. It's really hard to tell whether people's opinions are about kind of bias or if it actually doesn't flatter your body type.
So I know for me, one thing I do is when I buy my clothes, I always know what each thing, or I have a picture in my mind of what it is. And I always, whenever I get new clothes, I always ask what color things are lots of times. And from then on, when I put it in my closet or my drawer and then deciding if I want to wear it that day, what I do is basically I know all my shirts. I have a general idea of things that don't go together or things that do go together. And then I'll put those together, and I think it's like, even if you are sighted, sometimes you don't feel like wearing a certain thing that day. So then you change your outfit a couple of times. I know I've done that a few times.
Sometimes if I have like an important meeting where I feel like I need to be really on, I will wear something uncomfortable, like, you know, a dress shirt, a button-up shirt that might wrinkle because it'll force me to sit up straight and remember that this is important. Whereas if I wear comfortable clothes, it's kind of like feeling like you're in your pajamas. So it's more like going by feel instead of what it looks like. But then I have other outfits that make me feel confident because somebody has complimented me maybe when I wear it, or I feel like it I don't know, fits right. But yeah, it's more by feel than. But for me, honestly, I want feedback. So when I go shopping, I go with somebody I trust, and I want them to say, no, that doesn't look good, or yeah, that does look good, because I'm not going to buy it if it doesn't look good. So you definitely need, well, for me anyways, I wouldn't just trust my own instincts on whether something looks good or not.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. So I like to have friends who I trust, but friends who I also know are very blunt. Mm-hmm. So if something looks bad, they're going to tell me it looks bad. They're not like, because, you know, we all have friends who, you know, they're people pleasers, and, you know, they just want to make you feel good about yourself. And they'll go, oh, well, it looks okay. I'm like, I don't care if it looks okay. You know, like, I want to know if it looks good or if it doesn't, because if it doesn't, I'm just not going to get it.
Well, Clement, don't go shopping with me then.
So do you guys have any tips or tricks for organizing your clothes and remembering what things are, what colors they are?
Don't worry about it. That's my trick.
Don't worry about it. Okay, fair enough.
Well, I have a decent amount of vision still, and I don't like to buy clothes. I only generally do it if my family's going, unless I really need something specific, or I'm going shopping. Yeah, if I'm going sports clothes shopping, then I'm getting something specific, and certain colors will just completely disapply, considering I walk around in red track pants during the winter. So Yes, I just know the basics. If I'm gonna wear red on the top or on the bottom, I can't wear this red hoodie with it, because then I'm just gonna walk around looking like Santa all day. So then right. I have to wear a black top, but that's why I bought black pants, sweats, so that I can also wear a red top.
Yeah, there's a lot of like dark bottoms, solid color, and then kind of can get away with any color on top. But like you, Colby, I just memorize what my clothes are, like what color they are. I don't have any system. It's just know by feel.
Yeah, I don't have a system really. I know like certain shirts, I know it's that shirt because maybe it's the texture of the material, or maybe it has something like textured or raised kind of on it, or it's got so many buttons or whatever, things like that.
Yeah, I do
say that because my closet's actually organized into like certain things. Like I have a section for all my sports clothes, then I have like my dress shirts, then my casual like normal shirts, and then all my shirts that are like the fun ones where it's like I'll wear this on a fun like a it's like a shirt of like a TV show or something like I can wear with my friends and no one's really gonna care,
right?
But I can also see that, so it's a bit funny that that my stuff's all organized that way.
I do a couple of things, like Sean mentioned before, there's a lot of like, you know, either dark or solid bottoms with then, you know, patterned or colorful top, or I'm branching out a little bit more into buying more colorful, still solid colored, but colorful pants. And then I, you know, use maybe darker, plainer tops. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I do in my closet is like, or in my dresser more specifically here, I have, you know, one drawer for short sleeve shirts, one drawer for long sleeve shirts or mid sleeve shirts. And then I do like one pile's like stuff I know is all plain. One pile is stuff that either has, you know, designs or patterns. It kind of depends. Like, you know, sometimes it's like just a graphic right in the middle of the shirt. Sometimes it's the whole fabric that's patterned all over. And so same thing in my hanging clothes, it's kind of like, you know, blocks of this side's pattern, that side's not. And then like Colby and you both mentioned, you know, certain ones you're like, that's that one because I can feel it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I think I need to adjust my system. I have like the pile of tank tops and then the pile of long sleeved and then the pile of in between sleeved, you know, in a drawer, but I'm thinking, why do I have it that way? Because if I organized it the way you're describing, Randy, where it's sort of like, these are the things that I would wear with black bottoms, for example. These are all the colorful patterned type, whatever. I rarely wear patterns, but, and then these are like all the black and white, maybe tops, right? So yeah. It just might speed life up a bit.
I think it's, you know, I think everyone's systems kind of vary for the most part. And I mean, over time, like they evolve, like this isn't how I always did it. I'm kind of in the middle of reorganizing. So I turfed out my, you know, underwear and sock drawer, and now there it's a different sweater drawer. And now they're just kind of in bins because like, you know, I don't really need to have my socks in a drawer. They can go into a fabric storage bin in the storage unit shelf. You know?
Yeah, I do something similar, or I always like doing the kind of gradient, organizing it in the order of colors of the rainbow, and then the neutral stuff is together, and then the patterns are together, and it's kind of nice, because if I want a green top, I just kind of go, you know, and I can see like where all the greens are, or even like count stacks of shirts, and typically if, you know, red is the first color, then the fourth stack will be green shirts.
It sounds like you have a lot of clothes too, Nika.
The problem is I subdivide my clothes so specifically, so like, you know, I have the clothes like drawer just for shirts that I only wear at home and nowhere else. Like it's like my room is just full of drawers.
That's another thing too, like I have things in my closet additionally divided, so then it's kind of like, you know, casual versus business or fancy dress or dance costume.
Yeah, my one trick is that I only have black socks and white socks.
Oh, and they have white socks.
And they feel differently. And I buy packs of all same kind of socks so that in the laundry, you know, you don't have to find the exact mate. You can just find one of the six mates that it might be, which saves a lot of time.
I always find my socks go in and they don't come out very well.
I know, right? I know.
The fallacy of the missing socks.
Yes.
All right. Here's a very specific question. How do screen readers work on social media and photos?
Well, considering I've had to convert over to actually using screen readers now, since I used to be able to see and read most of that stuff, it's been a mixed bag. Some days they work. For reading text, they're generally fine. It's for pictures, it'll depend on if people, because now you can add the attachments so that you can put descriptions on your pictures, but if it doesn't, sometimes I don't know about the how different screen readers work, because I only use the one, but it'll give you a general, like it'll say this picture has food on it, or an animal, or a person, or it's scenery.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't have, if someone didn't add the caption parts where it'll actually fully describe it to you, I just know for my screen reader that it'll just give you a very basic one, or it'll just say no description attached.
My new pet peeve is when somebody posts a photo on social media and says, does anybody want this? And I'm like, I might, but I don't know what it is.
Because there is no back with that, because that seems like it'd be fun to bug people with.
I should, but no, I haven't so far. But it's like, become,
I'm thinking about it.
I do it all the time.
Do you?
Yep. Because if you need to be bold about it, you need to be bold about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when like in Facebook groups, when I'm looking at somebody's and somebody's, hey, like I got a new pedal today, and they put a picture of it up, and I'm like, which one? And then they'll actually answer me, and I'll be like, oh, see, there you go, it wasn't that hard. And the more technical answer to the screen reader side is, screen readers themselves do not work with photos and social media. The descriptions that we get are either from, like John said, the people who put the what they call alt text in the image, or they are generated by the actual websites themselves, e.g. Facebook. So screen readers themselves do not work with photos and social media very well. They work with social media just fine, the text portions, but they don't work with photos standalone.
And just in case somebody doesn't know what a screen reader is, basically any text that comes up on the screen, either the text that you've typed in yourself or the text that's coming up from an email or a search or whatever, is read in an electronic voice.
If it's actual text.
Right.
Not if it's like so what's very common now is for people to do memes, and memes are just screenshots of a picture that have either a joke or a quote or something. And that kind of text will not be read by a screen reader unless, again, like we said, the description is there, or it's on Facebook or Instagram, which is then read automatically, because a screen reader, like Sean said, was originally designed for email and searches and plain text.
Mm-hmm. And that whole, like, on social media reading memes now is fairly new, right? I'm sure it didn't used to do that.
Yeah, it did. Like the actual things,
like the text.
Read? Yeah, that's been around for the last 2 years or three.
Yeah, it was so cool when that originally started to be a thing.
Yeah, originally the image descriptions would just be very, very vague descriptions. Like it would say image might contain text.
Sometimes it'll say picture might have like food or whatever. And then you ask somebody what it actually is, and it's not that.
Oh, really?
That's interesting. Yeah.
Another technical sort of specific question. This person doesn't particularly like stepping on escalators, even as a sighted person, and is wondering how we do that.
When I was younger, I actually was scared of escalators, and I couldn't go on them unless I was holding onto my mom's hand. And then something that I started doing when I was older was I have to hold onto the railing of the escalator when I get on, just because my balance isn't great. So that's kind of what I do. I still haven't really mastered getting on it without holding onto something. but definitely like holding the railing and using that for support helps.
Mm. Definitely the railing for me cues me that I'm coming to the top of the escalator because it sort of prepares you to be propelled off the top, I guess, you know, if you can feel that coming. But I actually have no issue with escalators. Like with the white cane, it's feeling that step before you step on. And because the stairs are moving, I don't know, I almost find it's like almost easier than stairs. But I don't know, am I weird for that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I've never had an issue with escalators.
I mean, I don't think I'm weird for that. I'm on the higher end of visually impaired as far as amount of vision goes, but I'm also from a small town that doesn't have an escalator anywhere. So I don't know, like, I don't use a cane, but I do, you know, feel kind of through my shoes, the, like, there's usually kind of like the metal plate in front of the escalator. Mm-hmm. And then I'll get on, and sometimes I can't quite tell where the stairs are going to separate, because when they're flat for the first, you know, foot or two, they're, you know, you can't really tell very well, especially if the not particularly well-defined yellow line is faded and worn on them.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually just kind of like, you know, wait until I start feeling like, is it my toes going up? Are my heels dropping kind of thing, and adjust my weight and then step more firmly onto whatever step I'm on. And then same at the top, sometimes I'll even deliberately just stand there until my feet get propelled off of the moving part onto the metal flat plate at the end and then step from there.
Yeah, that's exactly how I do it, the way you described, except that the cane can sort of feel as the step starts to rise up, as that flat line kind of rises up. But it's, I don't know, I that metal plate at the bottom is also it helps you find the escalator. So your cane's going to make a loud noise on that metal grated part, where I guess that's why I feel like it's almost easier than stairs, because stairs are all just, you know, the same concrete. So finding where they begin or end is not as defined.
I know for me, especially with using a guide dog, I have my hand on the rail so that I know what direction it's going, and so that I can make sure that I'm ready before it gets to the very top so that the dog's paws don't get caught in the metal plate. So you just kind of have to know that it's coming up, being the top or the bottom, and then just kind of lifting him up a little bit.
Cool, that's a good point. It is very different, a little different with a guide dog. Okay. How do people who are blind grocery shop if not online shopping? And this is probably like people who can't just walk through the store and pick things off the shelves by themselves.
I mean, I have recently started doing my own grocery shopping because I eat a different diet from my family. And generally, I do go with my parents, and I try to be as independent as possible in the sense that I use an app called Seeing AI on my phone, which has a barcode scanner, and it can also kind of roughly read what's on some packages. Stuff with produce is actually something that's really important to me, because that is something I can completely independently shop for. I can feel exactly what it is. I know exactly what I want. Yeah, I think where it gets really hard is bulk shopping, because you have to write the number of the bin that you're getting food from.
Mm. And know what's in that bin without putting your hand inside to feel it.
Yeah, I when no one was around may or may not have done that. Obviously
no.
Not during COVID.
Oh my goodness. You should never do that. But anyways, so I used to do my own shopping. Now I have a husband who does most of the grocery shopping. But when I was single, I brought my typed out grocery list to the store, asked for customer service, and somebody would walk around the store with me and help me find all of the items on my list, and then I would carry them home, which, you know, load up the backpack. And it was tough, actually. It was like hard physical work getting those groceries home. And usually there would always be at least one item when I got home that was not what I wanted, you know, maybe not the right brand or whatever. But, you know, depending on who's helping you, sometimes they'll help you find the best deal or a better brand. The one thing about shopping when you're blind is, I know for me anyways, there's no impulse buying. There's no like catching, you know, seeing something and trying something new. You kind of have the same things on your list every time because
there's lots of impulse buying.
How do you
impulse? Oh, yes.
So with me, it's a similar way of shopping as Sean. So I have people who help me out. The difference is I go shopping with friends because I know there are some cultures and there are some blind people I know who don't like to do that because they don't like to burden their friends. I consider it just another part of hanging out because I have students do that all the time anyway. So, you know, during when we're making a day of it, somebody will go like, oh, I had to buy groceries. Oh, by the way, me too. Let's just go buy groceries together then. And then there'll inevitably be something, especially in the snack aisle because I have a soft spot for snacks. Where my friend will go, whoo, this looks interesting. And I'll be like, what is that? And they'll tell me what it is. And I'll be like, I never had it before, but I think I'm going to get it. So that's how I generally shop if I have to do groceries.
Cool. Although I got to say, online shopping's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Like online shopping is pretty awesome, yes.
Because now we can browse all the aisles. Totally impulse buy. What were you going to say, Colby?
I was just going to say not all of us have the capability to order online.
Geographically
like my
speaking.
Town doesn't.
Oh, that's what you mean. Okay.
Geographically speaking.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yes.
Not
yet for anybody more rural, smaller towns.
Yes. You know,
maybe it'll show up soon.
I will say the nice thing about being in a small town, if the town is small enough, odds are they'll know you if you only have one central grocery store that everybody shops at. And if you are a creature of habit, they'll probably be likely to know what you want. So that also helps.
Okay, next question. Is it okay to sometimes forget that you are blind?
Yes.
Yes.
That is a resounding yes. It's not okay to avoid talking about it, and it's not okay to walk around the subject on eggshells. But it's definitely permissible to every now and then just, oops, I didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
On the more sighted end of not even legally blind, technically, basically people don't have a clue how bad my vision is because I don't use a cane unless it's like very specific circumstances. And so to the outside perspective, it's like, yeah, she wears really thick glasses, but most of them don't really have the concept of what that actually means. So they're always going, hey, what's this? And they're like 20 feet down the store. And I'm like, are you holding something?
So in that case, you kind of wish they didn't forget so much?
I mean, it probably depends more on the day. Sometimes it's just funny. And I'm like, okay, maybe when you're closer. And I'm gesturing them, you know, somewhat sarcastically. And they're like, oh, sorry. And it's like, it's fine, but I can't even tell you're holding something down there, let alone what it is.
Right.
You know, other times it's like, can you just, what is this that you are asking me about? Tell me what this thing is over there that you want me to tell you information on, you know? So I think that's, you know, going to vary depending on the day. It's just kind of anything you get on a regular basis. You know, it might be the first time for that person or the first time they've asked that question or said that thing, but it's probably the 10,000th time you've heard it.
Mm-hmm. Me being in between Clement and Randy, actually, in the legal, and also having my vision changed. When I was younger, I didn't have to use my cane, and even with just normal glasses, I didn't look blind at all. And with my friends who are really close, they know, but they will forget. And you get that, the best one is the obvious one. What does that say? And it's like, I don't know. And their automatic response is, what are you, blind? And then they look at me for 3 seconds and I smile at them, and then it clicks in their own heads and they're just like, my God, every single time I fall for that.
I personally take it as a compliment when people forget. I think it's like, oh, you're not focused on the fact that I'm blind, because being blind is really just one aspect of me. It's not the whole package. And so it's generally is just a comment or, oh, did you see that? I'm like, nope. And then they're like, oh, sorry. But it's not offensive. It's amusing. And it's kind of nice in a way. It's like, I mean, don't forget when I'm at risk of like falling off a cliff or something, pull me back. Like, don't forget in those moments, but when we're just hanging out socially and, you know, yeah, it's totally cool.
I also have the other, there's also the other one where say you're already in it. Like when I do my coaching at wrestling, if I'm in the room before any new kids come in, I already don't have my cane out and I'm already doing things. And the new kids don't realize that I'm blind until either somebody mentions it or they notice me do something like not wave back at them or something. And then they ask somebody else about it. And apparently, like, I've talked to some of the kids, told me, it's like, oh, I didn't even realize that. And I've known you for a year or like three months. I'm like, okay. And they don't even realize, I walk into the school with the cane sometimes, they see, and some kids don't even know what that cane even means.
All right, so our final question of the night. What is the one thing you wish sighted people understood about blindness and visual impairment? So for me, the one thing, blindness does not mean helpless. And I guess sort of tied to that, because I think the one thing that bothers me the most about being blind is the people, the random strangers who just grab me to be helpful in a way that I don't find helpful. And so I guess it's like, we wouldn't be there on our own in that situation if we did not have the skills to get through it. So, you know, don't assume just because you see the white cane that that person is helpless and needs help would be the thing I would wish that people would understand.
Yeah. And at the very least, if you think they need help, ask. Because
yes,
you wouldn't go up to any other person and be like, and grab their arm and be like, oh, here, let me help you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you see a little, if you saw a little lady crossing the street with the groceries, you wouldn't just walk up behind her and like,
push her off
and walk her across the street. You ask them if they want help.
Yes.
And it's like, that shouldn't be any different than just because they have the cane.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that for me personally, I wish that people would understand that if you have limited vision or if you're blind, you know, we don't necessarily think that has to be fixed.
Good one. Right. We don't necessarily want to be sighted or to be cured or to be fixed. Yeah. That's true.
They don't realize that that brings a whole new battery of things you have to deal with once, say, you actually do get fixed. And then it's a whole
very
new
good
world.
Point.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good point. Sometimes being fixed actually makes things worse than better.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Clement? What's the one thing?
Very similar, but I would say that I would want sighted people to understand that blindness to us is just another characteristic. Some people are good at certain things. Some people are not so good at certain things. Some people are capable of certain things. Some people just naturally can't do certain things. And I think for me, if I was to get one message across, that is what blindness is to me. Others might have different opinions, but to me, that's what it is. And it's not this huge overarching, you know, storm cloud that everybody seems to think it is.
So I think something I've experienced is that whenever I tell people I want to do something that, you know, typically isn't common for people who are born visually impaired to do, such as dance or wanting to work in medicine and healthcare, I feel like I either get the reaction, oh, you're crazy and unrealistic, that will never happen, or oh, you're so amazing and inspiring. And I think for me, I'm not really either of those things. I'm just me. I'm average. I'm like any other 19-year-old. I don't think what I want to do is particularly out there, unrealistic. I don't think I'm particularly amazing or inspiring. I'm just kind of being my normal self, and that's just kind of what I've always known.
Well said. Well, these have been pretty good questions. And we're open to more. So if you have a question about blindness or visual impairment that you'd like us to tackle, send an email to limitless@blindbeginnings.ca. You can also email us with any topics that you want us to discuss on the podcast or just with any feedback at all. Thanks so much, you guys, for joining me today. Appreciate all your wisdom.
No problem. It was a pleasure.
It was a great time.
All right. This is Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet. Please join us again. This podcast has been brought to you by PCI Developments, one of our corporate sponsors of our Blind Beginnings Harvesting Hope Gala. Find them online at www.pci-group.com. Tickets to the Blind Beginnings Harvesting Hope online gala are now on sale. The gala will take place on October 17th, 2020 at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Tickets are $30. If you're interested in purchasing a ticket and helping support Blind Beginnings and the work we do, visit our website for more information at www.blindbeginnings.ca.